The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Geek Vibes Live.
Welcome, 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 Geek Vibes Nation, to a special episode of Geek Vibes Interview. We have a very, 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 very special guest tonight. A Los Angeles native, best known as one of the original cast members of Mad TV, also starred in Pulp Fiction, but better known for his voice projects, his voiceover work projects, such as Justice League Unlimited, Samurai Jack, Family Guy, American Dad, Star Wars, The Clone Wars, and so much more. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Phil Lamar.
Hey there.
What's going on? What's going on?
Not too much. Well, that's actually completely untrue. I'm in the middle of an Indiegogo campaign for this cartoon I'm trying to get off the ground, Goblins. And I've never done crowdfunding before. I've done a lot of cartoons, but never had to raise the money. And,
right.
Man, it's work, you know?
Yeah, well, listen, we are here to help however we can. That's actually a great segue you gave me to my first question that I was going to ask you. I've seen numerous videos and, on the page for Goblins. It looks like so much fun, and I love the idea of getting a show from the point of view of the monsters. What can you tell us about this project that you are the co-creator for?
It's based on a really popular webcomic my friend Terrell does called Goblins, and it's his premise. The little low-level monsters you play against in D&D that you basically just chop their heads off so you can get like a plus one sword to get you to the real dungeon. You know, his premise was, what do those goblins like getting their heads chopped off? Probably not. Why don't they become adventurers so they can level up and protect themselves? So, yeah, our adventuring party, you know, the paladin and the monk, the warrior, those are all goblins. And, you know, so they're going through and doing their adventuring. And, you know, I've been reading the comic, and it's just so good. He, like, takes that one little premise and then just like build this world. And my buddy Matt King hit me to it, and we were just like, oh man, this would make a fantastic animated series. And so I called up a bunch of my friends, Billy West, Maurice LaMarche, Tara Strong, Jennifer Hale, Steve Bloom, and got them on board to voice the characters. And we wrote up the script based on the original storyline. And right now we're trying to make this real badass trailer to show people what the storyline and what the characters are like, because like executives, it's not like anything that's out there. So to try to just hand it to them on a piece of paper, they're not going to get it, especially something that's D&D has gotten more popular, but it's not comic books. It's not superheroes. And so you tell some studio executive about it, he's like, okay, can we make it more, approachable to the mainstream? And, first thing they're going to do is try to make it for little kids because the goblins are colorful.
Right.
Like, yo, man, no, this is not that. This is not,
I completely understand that. And honestly, like I said, watching the videos that you guys have on your Twitter and everything, I just love the idea of it. And I would hate for, the corporate suits to go, well, let's pander to children and Let's make it colorful. Let's make it, you know, something that's kind of funny and completely drain what you guys originally had planned for it and make it to something completely else so we can sell toys. No.
Right.
But keep it exactly how it is, because honestly, as soon as I heard the idea behind it, the idea of these monsters who, you know, get pretty much stomped all over and people could care less about them, like, we keep forgetting, you know, they matter also. Like, you know, they, I'm sure, don't like being, you know, stabbed 80,000 times or their heads cut off. Let's hear from their point of view. So this is something that
sounds
got
a lot of humor,
like,
too.
So much fun.
You know, because the goblin tribes name themselves, you know, sort of like, you know, indigenous people do, you know, names having to do with their physical characteristics or their destiny or whatever. You know, there's like big ears and one eye, you know. And my character that I'm voicing is called Complains of Names, because he's always got an issue with everybody else's name. You know, like, why'd you name this guy Dies Horribly? I mean, now he's living his life in constant fear because he knows he's destined to die horribly. That's why would you name him that?
You know.
And you're the chief just because you're named chief. This makes no
sense. That's what I'm talking about. You already have this pure humor attached to it. You don't need that extra humor. You know what I'm talking about. The corpus suits would want you to to oversaturate it with humor.
Right.
That sounds perfect right there. But pretty much what these executives should know when you guys pitch it is anything Phil Lamar's name is attached to, just book it. Book it, sign off on it. Just give the okay. Give him what he needs to make it happen. I can't even think of the last time I saw something that you had your name attached to that I was just like, no, I don't know if I like this. I've loved everything you've done. And honestly, I was talking to my co-host, Joelle, about this not too long ago. When I looked at the list of things that you've done that I didn't even realize you've done, I'm just like, I think Phil Lamar is my entire childhood. You know what I'm saying? Like, you are my childhood. And then what's even crazier about that is growing up and then watching Mad TV, I used to always tell my dad, you know, was huge on Saturday Night Live. I used to always tell him, I didn't get why he was huge on that. I was huge on Mad TV. So we would always have these conversations on what we thought was better. I honestly thought Mad TV was widely underrated. Some of the best comedy minds came from Mad TV, and I feel as though this newer generation, now that Saturday Night Live is still going on, I know Mad TV was brought back for a little bit. They did, but they don't appreciate how important and how great that show was and how many great comedy minds came from that. Keegan-Michael Key, that everyone, you know, loves from Key and Peele, they forget he came from Mad TV.
No, and that's where he and Jordan met. They weren't partners before Mad TV.
Yeah. I mean, what are your thoughts on how you know, do you feel as though Mad TV is something that's underrated and not talked about as widely and, you know, just being revered as one of those great sketch comedy shows? Do you feel as though it's underrated in today's time also?
A little bit. I mean, the one thing that SNL has, you know, for all their ups and downs, that I feel like was lacking, like the Mad TV producers had an amazing eye for talent. I mean, just in terms of the people I'm still friends with and who I'm still fans of that I worked with on there and the people that I watched after I left, you know, they had some incredibly talented people there and the writers, you know, but they lacked an overall vision, you know, which I think might have been the thing that could have lifted it to that one next level, you know. Because in the beginning, they kind of had a concept of like, oh, it's going to be a TV version of Mad Magazine, you know, and they, you know, did the movie parodies, you know, and some of them were just brilliant. I mean, we did one, I think third season, that was basically a black version of the Three Stooges, you know, it's like the Trey Stooges, you know, and it was me, Orlando, and Deborah playing, you know, black versions of Moe, Larry, and Curly. You know, and instead of a pie fight, it was a cocaine fight. You know.
Yeah, but that's what I'm talking about. That's how special you guys were with your comedy. And I think the only reason SNL is, besides longevity and things like that, was just the bigger names they were able to grab. You know, like the Eddie Murphys and
right.
Steve Martin, like guys like that.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. What I was talking about when I talk about vision. Those SNL people took a hand in launching people from their show, you know, into stardom. You know,
mm-hmm.
John Belushi, oh, you want to go do Animal House? Sure, go ahead. Oh, Chevy, you're doing it. They realized that if somebody started on their show and then went on to huge success, it reflected well on them. And then they could get even more talented people coming their way. The Mad producers never got that. Like, you know, they had a chance. Alex Borstein was supposed to be on Gilmore Girls, but she was still under contract to Mad TV. And the producers of Gilmore Girls were like, we love her, we want her, we will let her do both shows, we will shoot around, you know, your schedule, anything you want. And the Mad producer said, nah, she's ours. You know?
Wow.
Which doesn't make any sense. Like, hello, she's about to be on a primetime show with three times the audience of your show. You could have her. You could add 2 years to her contract in exchange for this, and then you have a bigger star who is now getting your name further out there. And they said no. And you know who got that part? Melissa McCarthy. You know, you want to talk about launching a career, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's insane. That's crazy. I mean, why wouldn't they realize that, you know, furthering your cast into doing bigger things only furthers you also? Because they would say, blah, 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 from Mad TV. You know what I'm saying? So people
right.
would go, oh, what's this Mad TV? Let me
exactly.
check it out. And then they would fall in love with Mad TV from that. That just doesn't make any sense.
No, it's a skewed idea of ownership, and also just didn't have faith in the concept of the show. You know, they were afraid that if they lost one of their talented people, they would lose their show. And, you know, you can't succeed in a mindset of fear. You know what I'm saying?
Not at all.
But, you know, people went on, you know, Orlando, Nicole Sullivan, incredibly talented people, just went on and do more and more funny stuff. Nicole Parker, you know, just there's so many great people who came through that show.
Absolutely. Like I said, I thought it was funnier than Saturday Night Live. Honestly, that's my opinion. Mad TV was my thing. It definitely was not Saturday Night Live. It still isn't. I'd still rather Mad TV. Saturday Night Live. So I have to ask you this. We've
mm-hmm.
had Michael Rosenbaum on. We've had
no way.
We actually just met Kevin Conroy the other day at Ace Comic Con in New York.
Nice.
Susan Eisenberg. We're starting to complete our Justice League voiceover team.
Catch them all.
So getting you on exactly. So getting you on is a huge boost in that. So my question is to you, is there a chance we could see a Justice League animated reunion, whether it be in a movie format or maybe just like a final season to like maybe further wrap things up or just something, just you guys coming back?
I hope so. I hope so, because all of those people are the nicest, most talented people. I'd be back there in a heartbeat. The toughest thing, and especially, you know, because we all know – you know, Warner Brothers working their thing is not a necessarily 100%, you know, deal. Is getting the writers back,
right.
You know, because we're all attached to these characters, you know, but the truth is Justice League was about those stories. It was one of the few shows at that time doing story arcs, and the fact that they made those iconic characters work in this group and balancing the storylines of seven different characters. That is not easy. You know, as you know, I thought they did a decent job in the Justice League movie, but you know, it was basically about the return of Superman. That was your storyline. Nobody else really had a story. Like even Bruce Wayne didn't have a storyline. You know, so that becomes the challenge. I mean, I think all of us would be back there to play those characters in a heartbeat. You know.
Well,
but,
listen, I'm hoping it happens because, I was saying, you're the voice of my childhood, and you doing Green Lantern. First of all, you doing John Stewart's Green Lantern, opening up the world to John Stewart, just meant so many. It was so important for so many different reasons.
Juan. That's good to hear, young man.
Oh, that is so awesome. That is so awesome. You now have fans like myself that kind of clamor more for a John Stewart than they do Hal Jordan. So my question to you is, knowing that in the DC live-action world, we'll be getting a Green Lantern Corps, well, hopefully, somewhere down the line, did you ever do you have any idea on who you'd like to see as John Stewart in a live-action film?
I don't know. It depends on the storyline. I mean, I've always thought that Dennis Haysbert is, to me, as far as live action, is the physical embodiment of what I picture John Stewart as. You know, he's tall, he's strong, he's handsome, he's already got the voice. You're in good hands with Allstate. You know what I'm saying? And he has that military bearing, you know, that seriousness, you know, but at the same time, I know as an actor, he's, you know, got the chops to play whatever he needs to play. But, you know, if they're trying to go with origin story and they want somebody younger, then I don't know if Dennis is the choice. It depends on, you know, the storyline. To me, the question about a core movie is, how do you work in John? You know, because all us comic book heads, we sort of take a lot of stuff for granted that is absolutely ridiculous. Like the fact that there are 2-3 backup Green Lanterns for Earth. That'll make no sense. Like, if you tried to show that to a regular audience, they'd be like, what? What are you talking about? Wait, who's the Green Lantern? Like, well, it's this guy. He's the Green Lantern of Earth. Oh, so each planet has a Green Lantern. Well, not each planet, each sector. Okay. So why does this one sector have four? You know?
No, I completely agree with you.
You know?
I completely agree with you. That's why I thought if they did a live action, the best way to do it, so John can kind of get the spotlight, the best way to do it is to say that, you know, an older Hal Jordan, he's doing more so work on Oa, protecting, you know, kind of all of the things going on up there. He stations John on Earth. He says, you know, I'm handling things up here. You handle things on Earth. You be Earth's guardian. So we can kind of just flesh out John Stewart's story more. We can learn more about him. I always thought Idris Elba would be a perfect John Stewart, just because he has that voice, that very deep, demanding voice, and the presence that he brings when he's on screen is just, it's undeniable. I thought he'd always be a great one, but they'll probably go younger. Who knows? Like you said, story is always important.
My problem with Idris is if they go with this, you know, same storyline that John is, and I had this problem with him in Pacific Rim. To me, Idris does not read like a military man.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? He's too cool.
Mm-hmm.
He got a little strut.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, when they teach you to march, you lose that. That is the first thing to go. That little, you know, little hitch. But, I mean, I also know he's a fantastic actor, and I'm sure he could play that if he wanted to.
Right.
No, it's again, it comes down to the writing. You know, what story do they come up with? And then you got to, you know, once you have that story, then you've got to find the best actor to play it, because, you know, what's the emotional range? What's required? Because too much of the time, you know, Batfleck, you get there and you just sort of cast based on a notion, and that's not the best way to do it. You cast based on the story. Who is going to bring this story to life the best? You know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that's part of what the live action world is struggling with, is that it's not only not necessarily a clear sense of direction, but it's also the stories, I feel, just kind of waver, like by the movie. Like the stories kind of just are in and out. But that's why we love and we always go back to the cartoons in the animated movies, because it's so structured,
right.
And it's well thought out, well acted by the voice actors, and it's just honestly it's just way much better than the live action that we're dealing with right now.
Now, honestly, you know why I think it is, why I think the animated movies are better generally, because they're not serving as many masters. Like when they do these movies, they're not trying to build a billion-dollar franchise that'll run for 20 years. They're not trying to, you know, serve hardcore fanboys and, you know, DCU continuity at the same time. They just say, we like this story. We're going to pull this story from the comic books and build our world around this story. You know, much the same way Marvel did. You know, they took what was good from their comic book storylines, but, you know, they didn't make Iron Man have to build that, you know, big clunky armor, then change it to gold, then change it to red and gold. You know, they're like, no, we're going to get rid of that part, and we're just going to use the things that work for this story. You know, the movies, they suffer too much from, like, trying to be everything to everybody. You know, and I think part of that has to do with the fact that those characters are so much more iconic. You know, when you got Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman, even people who have never picked up a comic book have an opinion. You know, Wonder Woman wouldn't do that. It's like, you ain't never read a Wonder Woman comic book in your life. Who are you to say? But they think that, you know, so it's so much easier to be wrong when you're doing a story about Batman or Superman, you know, because somebody will tell you that you're wrong.
Yeah.
You know, you said I was – sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because Marvel got sort of lucky, you know, that by the time they began their movie universe, they had sold off their most iconic characters. So they had to start with the B-list, you know. And audiences in general didn't really care. They had heard of Iron Man, but nobody was saying – was going in watching for how it was going to be wrong. You know what I'm saying? They were just laying back and ready to take in the story, you know, which is much harder when the characters are bigger and more iconic.
That's why I give Kevin Feige and Marvel so much praise, because it was a risk starting off with Iron Man, who I thought outside of his cartoon in the 90s, the general public had no idea who Iron Man was.
Right.
We got to remember Spider-Man, Hulk, Wolverine, guys like that, the general masses had an idea about. Iron Man, Thor to some degree, the Avengers in general, the general audience had no idea about any of these characters. That's why Iron Man was able to be its complete, was able to be its own thing.
Yeah.
Because if it didn't work, then you could kind of go back to the drawing board, figure out what other character that the general audience knows you could maybe bring out. But they were able to focus on just making it a good movie.
Right, and you're not as beholden to continuity, because not everybody knows all the ins and outs of his story. You know, you can, you know, nobody was going, where's Avengers Mansion? You know, Tony Stark doesn't live in that kind of building, you know. Whereas when you're doing Fantastic Four, you got to have the Baxter Building, and you have to work that in, you know? And same thing with Batman and Superman. There's so many things you have to do. Where's Lois Lane? Why haven't you done, you know? Again, even people who don't care are going to hold you up to that.
Yeah, and honestly, they have a formula to go off of. You know, people remember all the way back to the Keaton films.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certain things that they learned. Some people were introduced to Batman through the comics earlier.
Right.
Some people
right.
were introduced to Adam West, Michael mm-hmm. Keaton, or Kevin Conroy's Batman the Animated Series. So you have
yeah.
in your mind an idea on what you think Batman should be. That's where
right.
Marvel had a strength. Not that many people had any idea an Iron Man existed, so it was very
right.
easy for them to just focus on making a really good movie.
Yeah.
I have to ask you, this is actually a question me and my dad were talking about few days ago, because it was something I always wanted to ask you. You were a part of possibly the greatest scene ever made in movie history with Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta. How
yeah.
was it being a part of that iconic scene?
It was great. It was fantastic because, one, that script, you know, we were talking about the story, that script was a work of art. Like, if he had never even shot the movie, Quentin would be famous just for writing that script. It was so good that, you know, because the scene you're talking about, the scene in the apartment, was the scene that we auditioned with. And it's the kind of thing that you read it through two times and already you have it memorized. You're like, wait, how do I know this already? Because even though the world he builds is not real and it is not our world, it all flows together. It all makes sense. Each line is the line that should come after the next one, you know? So it just jumps into your brain. And so, you know, we're sitting there shooting that on a, you know, soundstage in Culver City, and we all know the scene, forwards and backwards, you know? And everybody could just take it to the hoop, you know? And just, I mean, Samuel L. Jackson, you know, Sam was the heart and soul of that scene, and it was like watching Jordan play ball. He was so good, so effortless, and at the same time made everybody around him better. You know what I'm saying? He was the focus, but he also didn't make it about him. You know, you got Frank in there with the burger and, you know, say what again? What? You know. The dialogue, the tension, the humor, all of it all working all at the same time. Because that scene is legitimately scary and also legitimately funny in the same breath. Does he look like a bitch? What? Say what again? You know, like all of those moments, you know, just there's very few, you know, pieces of writing as an actor you get that are that good.
I tell you, I could watch that movie a billion times, and that scene to me, I can't even think of another scene. It wasn't technically the opening scene, but I consider it to be the opening scene. I think that's possibly one of the greatest opening, kind of opening scenes I've ever seen in my life. It blended perfectly with comedy and seriousness. It was just so well written.
Yeah, well, Pulp Fiction has a few opening scenes. I always say that it is the perfect cable movie because, you know, most of the time you would flip the channel to get to, you know, cable, and you'd come into a movie and it would be like a third of the way in. You're like, oh, I missed the good part. With Pulp Fiction, whatever you flip to is the start of another story. Like, you're never missing the good part. You know?
I completely agree with you. One thing I have to also know is, just in general, how was it working with Tarantino?
It was great. It was great. Because I got to work with him both in that group scene, you know, where we were all together on set, and I also got to work with him one-on-one because we, like my part in the back seat of the car, we had to shoot alone. Because they were shooting with an actual camera in the car, so the close-ups where I'm looking at Sam and John, they're not in the car. It's just the cameraman, the driver, and Quentin were all up in the front seat. You know, so
mm-hmm.
While we're driving to location, he was fantastic. He's like talking to me in character, you know, helping me work out my backstory, keep me in my moment. You know, it's like, you know, you've just come from this, you know, apartment where, you know, you've just seen your friends get killed, you know, and he just gave me everything I needed to, you know, embody the character. And I had such a great time on that set, definitely.
I can imagine, man. Just working with the list of actors that you worked with in that movie and working with Quentin Tarantino, I can imagine the stories that you were able to get from filming that. Okay, so I have a fan question here from one of my from one of your fans from our page. Huge Static Shock fan. His question is, it's kind of a two-way question. One, would you step back into doing a voice for Static Shock, like, you know, obviously an older Virgil? And what would you like to see happen with the character of Static Shock that I think DC as a whole kind of just forgot about since the animated series?
I can still do Virgil, you know, at whatever age you want him. I mean, Virgil Hawkins is Virgil Hawkins. That's who he is. To me, I love that character so much. It's definitely, you know, one of the characters that I relate to personally the most, just because, you know, I felt like Virgil is the closest to, you know, what I would have been had I somehow gotten electrical powers at 14, you know, because I would have tried to get my homework done and fight crime. But yeah, I mean, I would step back into that role in a heartbeat. I told Greg Weisman of Young Justice this, that I was mad because I worked on, you know, the original run of Young Justice, and they cast somebody else as Virgil. And I got a little bent out of shape. I'm like, really? You know I'm right here, right? But I understand that their thing was trying to, you know, separate themselves from the previous iterations of, you know, most of the characters. So I didn't take it. I did a little personally, but not too personally.
So I mean, I have to ask the gentleman who did play Static Shock. Did he come to you at all? Talk to you at all? Because you were the originator of the voice of Static Shock. Did you guys talk at all?
No.
No. I always hate to hear that.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I didn't write the character. I didn't create the character. You know, if you're gonna go talk to anybody, you talk to Dennis Cowan and Dwayne McDuffie. Mm-hmm. I voiced the character. And the thing is, he wasn't going to be doing my voice anyway. He's going to be doing his version of the voice. So, you know, what am I going to tell him? You know, I wish I had that job back.
I was just about to say, tell him, hey, listen, you do not want this. Pick something else.
You know.
No, but I completely understand that. But it's always one of those, to me, and this isn't obviously the mindset of everybody, but to me, that's always like a respect thing, especially if you're working amongst the same project, just knowing that you're, you know, the OG of it, you know, just to come to you and just like, listen, man, you know, any pointers on how to bring this character alive or anything like that? I know most actors like to do that themselves, but I always hate to hear that, you know, someone that's doing another character just doesn't kind of just have communication, even a little bit.
Well, he may not have even known who the character was because
he never
put on the suit, and he's just referred to as Virgil in Young Justice.
That is true.
And I don't know. I don't know the guy. If he's not a comic book guy, no way he's going to, you know, connect those dots.
That's very true. No, that's definitely very true. And like I said, I get it. They kind of want it to be their own, but I'm not even saying to call you to ask you how to do the part, just to call you and just like, you know, I know you were the originator. It's so awesome that I'm now, becoming Virgil. Just something along those lines. I just always like when people who are doing the same characters just kind of, you know, especially if they're amongst the same project in some sort. They just have some kind of communication.
It is sort of a weird thing, because I think about that. I mean, like, when I go to conventions, I generally don't have pictures of characters that I didn't originate. You know, because, I mean, like Aquaman, there's, you know, been 5 or 6 people who have voiced Aquaman, you know, throughout the years. You know, John DiMaggio and Scott Rummel did it before I did, you know, on Young Justice. So, you know, it's hard to feel a sense of ownership, you know, but at the same time, when you're playing, when you get the chance to embody these, you know, iconic roles, you are connected in some ways, you know, like we are the handful of guys who have gotten to add to this legacy, you know, so I don't know.
I always, yeah, I mean, I'm completely with you. Like I said, it's, you know, just a phone call. I mean, he could have gotten in touch with you and, you know, how was it, stuff like that.
Right.
Another question to you is, huge fan of this show. How was it working with Alex again and working with Seth MacFarlane for Family Guy?
Oh, well, it's funny because Alex and I were work on Family Guy because of Mad TV. There was a Fox executive who was in charge of Mad TV was talking with Seth MacFarlane about this new show. And in fact, for a very brief moment, there was a chance that his early version of Family Guy was going to run on Mad TV as little, you know, interstitial clips, the way that The Simpsons started on the Tracy Ullman show. Now, and I'm sure that the Mad TV producers are kicking themselves every time Seth MacFarlane goes, you know, into his private jet for not, you know, because that's the thing. Had they agreed to that, they probably would have been executive producers, you know, on Family Guy, you know, from then until now. Just like all the guys who are on The Simpsons, you know. So.
Yeah. No, it's so crazy, though. I bet because we do know very early on Family Guy had its struggles. So I'm sure Mad TV then was like, yeah, good thing we're not attached to it. But when you see how they were able to flip that and turn that into this huge successful run that they've had. Yeah, I agree with you. Someone in that used to work with Mad TV has to be sitting there like, man, we could have maybe just tried it. Like,
right?
We didn't have to keep it. We could have just tried it and see what came from it. Yeah, no, I completely understand that. But I would imagine it's so much fun working with Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah, he's so talented. You know, and just I always used to joke that, you know, I've been in Hollywood a long time, and I've seen a lot of people get paid a lot of money, and Seth might be the one person who's actually worth it. You know, because, I mean, I love Matt Groening. Matt Groening is an incredibly nice and incredibly smart, brilliant, funny person. But he only draws and writes. Seth,
right.
You know, draws, writes, acts, sings, you know, wrote the theme song, you know.
Seth MacFarlane to me has always been like a Swiss Army knife, like very little that he can't do.
And now he's actually, you know, nailed it on camera as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is just,
Ted,
I mean,
was a success, and his new Star Trek themed show is a success also. So yeah,
right. That's what I'm talking
about.
You
do everything.
There honestly is nobody in entertainment history with the breadth of success that he's had. I mean, think about it. That's like as if Tex Avery had also directed Gone with the Wind and Gunsmoke. You know what I'm saying? You know,
I completely agree. Yeah, no, that doesn't happen. Seth MacFarlane is definitely one of a kind. So speaking of Seth MacFarlane, knowing that he does voice work and live action, My question to you is, which do you prefer, voiceover work or live action?
You know, it's funny because people ask me that fairly often. The truth of the matter is, when you're talking about quality material with really talented creators, there is no difference. Just, you know, based on, you know, medium. You know, and I'm working with Gindy Tartakovsky. That is the same kind of work that I got to do with, you know, on Samurai Jack, as I got to do with Quentin on Pulp Fiction. Like, those are all at the same level. Quality is basically its own genre. You know what I'm saying? You know, a Justice League has more in common with, you know, they did a movie with Jason Reitman, Men, Women, and Children. Those things have more in common than Justice League has in common with, you know, Pound Puppies or something. You know, you're going to tell me that those two things are alike just because they're made in the same, you know, animation process? Nuh-uh.
Right.
One of them is
creators
with a vision, you know, and an eye for talent and story. And that, you know, is a thing in and of itself.
Yeah, no, I completely understand you. And, you know, to me, what we've heard a lot, because we've had so many different voice actors on, and when we've asked them that, they say we love doing either one. We love doing voice work or live action. If we get the chance to do live action, we definitely enjoy doing it. But honestly, I love the idea of knowing with voice actors, and that's why I say you're definitely my childhood. When I close my eyes and picture these characters, it's you. It's you. So that's definitely something that that a lot of people cherish, because a lot of these cartoons that we got back then that had substance, meant a lot. We got a lot of great actors and actresses from. We just the kids nowadays, well, they don't even watch cartoons, but the kids nowadays don't get anything near that. And it's kind of just crazy, because, you know, you remember waking up early either on Saturday or Sunday morning to watch your cartoons. For me, it would be waking up super early to watch Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. But the kids nowadays, they could care less. They're on their phones, their tablets and stuff. It's crazy.
Well, you know, it's weird, because I think there's something interesting about, like, when the cartoon time was limited, when you knew you only had this window of time on this day of the week to watch those things that were made just for you. You know, nowadays people like, you know, I heard that cartoon's good. I'll check it out, you know, on my phone while I'm driving home or whatever. Like, you have everything at your, you know, the tip of your fingers. So it's not the watching of it isn't as special. You know what I'm saying? You know, so because you can watch it whenever you want, stop it, pause it, you know, fast forward to some part that you think is kind of slow, you know. Whereas before, you were lucky, you know, if you had to go to the bathroom, there was going to be a moment that you would never see again, you know.
Yeah, no, I am completely with you. I remember those days. I would have to, when I would wake up, I would be like, all right, if my favorite one is Justice League Unlimited, I'll make sure I eat cereal, like, after, in case I, like, have to get up and go to the bathroom or something.
Right.
I'll watch it after, so I make sure I don't miss anything, because you don't want to be that guy that goes into school and everyone's like, did you see Justice League Unlimited last night? No, I missed that part. I had to use the bathroom.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Oh. So, you know, kids nowadays are definitely more privileged in that aspect, because back then you couldn't miss any of that.
Right.
There was no rewinding or going on the internet to pull up the, you know, the specific clip that you missed.
Exactly.
It was nowhere near. And honestly, I don't even think kids nowadays would have appreciated it as much as we did. It just, like I said, it meant so much. And you were so integral to, like I said, most of those cartoons. Like, every time I think about it, I was like, there were mornings where I'd wake up really early to watch Justice League Unlimited. Wait, and then there were mornings I did it for Static Shock. Wait, you were in both. So it was like, you were definitely a huge part of it. But us being a large geek community that we are, my fan base would definitely destroy me if I didn't ask you this this question. It's a two-sider. Which do you prefer, Marvel or DC? I know that's crazy because most of your work has been with DC. And also, when can we expect to see you in a live-action Marvel or DC movie?
Live-action?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I've auditioned a couple of times for some of the Marvel movies. I did have my my brief cameo in Spider-Man 2. So
yes,
I guess technically I've been in, you know, a superhero movie. Marvel or DC? I don't know. Actually, I guess if I have to go back to my roots, I'm a Batman guy. He is my totem animal. So I guess I am at heart a DC person.
Yeah. What's crazy is, I am all Batman. Like everything.
Oh, really?
Is Batman with me. Yeah. So obviously meeting Kevin Conroy the other day was just like,
oh wow.
My goodness. And then having him autograph one of his pictures and take a picture with me. That's my Batman. I love Batman. So, yes, I can completely understand your assessment and Batman being your favorite. What's crazy is over these last, I'd say, 10 years where Marvel has just been, like, huge, it would always kill me, even though, obviously, The Dark Knight had its successful trilogy. It killed me because I'm like, all right, I'm Batman. I'm, you know, so being a fan of Batman, you're obviously are a fan of DC, so it's like it kills me that I'm loving Marvel as much as I'm loving Marvel.
DC
world, it's crazy.
But you get into that weird false dichotomy thing. Like you have to pick one or the other, or the fact that you like a Marvel movie in some way detracts from your DC love. Why? What you know,
yep.
Like, oh, I love Hamlet. Oh, but I'm really more of a Richard III kind of guy. Like, that doesn't make no sense.
No, that
you
that
can
is,
appreciate
that is very
each
true.
Work on its own merits. You know, also by the same token, it doesn't mean you have to love everything any one of them does. You know, just because, no, I'm Marvel, do or die. So I have to, you know, you can't say anything bad about this. It's like, well, if it's bad, you should be able to say that it's bad. You know,
yeah.
Not because you got a tattoo on the back of your thigh.
Honestly, that is 100% the truth. And you're absolutely right in that assessment. It happens way too much, especially on Twitter. You see the DC guys versus Marvel guys.
Right.
And the crazy thing about that is when you're that blinded by your loyalty, what we always say here at Geek Vibes Nation is, what makes us laugh about people who are so one over the other is that these guys that you're defending, like I say the same thing about sports, these guys that you're defending so, you know, so hard.
Right.
You do know that they're friends with each other, right? Like the hate that you're having for the other, like if you're a Yankees fan and you're hating a Red Sox fan, you do know most of these guys when they come
they
into
hang out
each
together
other's parents,
in Florida in the
they hang out. Exactly. I mean, we saw the most recent thing. We saw Henry Cavill and Chris Evans. They're like best of friends. So like, when you're saying I'm DC, so you know everything Marvel does is bad. It's like I get that you're trying to defend it, but just know that they're best of friends. So,
right.
So if they're not enemies, why are you trying to make them enemies? Just relax and enjoy it. It's okay if you prefer one, but you don't have to voice it as if like one's inferior to the other. Just say, you know, I prefer DC. I don't really like what Marvel does all that much. You can do that, but you don't have to kind of start this huge war of fandom when honestly these guys that you're defending are best friends with each other anyway. So
yeah,
makes completely.
No, there's no
sense.
Reason for you who ain't getting paid nothing to take it more seriously than the people who are, you know?
Exactly. exactly. To them, it's all fun. I mean, you just had Jason Momoa in the cast of Justice League at Ace Comic-Con saying that they'd love to take on the Avengers. But that's them being playful. That's not them saying Marvel is the enemy and we should take them down. No, that's just them being playful. Jason Momoa is saying he'd like to throw around the Incredible Hulk, see how he likes it. It's just it's tongue-in-cheek. It's to have fun. It's to show that. And honestly, one of the guys that I started Geek Vibes Nation with, Dane, he would always say, if you're Marvel, you need DC to succeed. If you're DC, you need Marvel to succeed. If one of those completely flames out, the whole idea of superhero fatigue will start to kick in. And if one flames out, the other one might not have that much longer, you know, in what it's doing. So you need all of them to succeed.
Yes.
So, you know, it's one of those things where it's just like, let's just all, you know, kumbaya. But before we get into letting you go, one very important question I want to ask you. Well, two very important questions.
What's that?
One, when can we expect Goblins to be released? I'm super excited for this project.
Well, we've got about 12 more days left in our campaign. So, you know, if everything goes as planned, in those 12 days, we'll get the money we need to make the trailer. And it's funny because you can now shoot a movie on your iPhone, you know, and edit it while you're walking. But the animation process has not changed along with the technology. It still takes 9 months or something to make all of the images that have to go into doing, you know, high quality animation, which is what we're aiming for. So if everything goes as planned, we should have it some point in 2018.
Perfect. Please, you spoke with one of my representatives, Kanan. He's who got this whole interview and stuff set up. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kanan. Please keep in contact with us. Whatever link we can share, whatever you need us to do on our end to further promote this project, because we are very excited for this. So please keep us to date with everything going on that, so we can further get this out there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I'll keep everything on my Twitter, you know, at Phil Lamar, two L's in the middle, two R's on the end, and on my Facebook and on the Goblins Animated pages. We're trying to keep everything up to date, but I will definitely tag you guys on Twitter to help us get the word out. Thank you.
Please do. You know, we have Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, everything.
Oh, I've got to follow you on Instagram.
We'll share it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll definitely send you the
You'll get a Goblins Animated follow just in a couple of seconds.
Sounds good to me. We will definitely shoot you an inbox on Twitter of our Facebook and our Instagram so we can further get Goblins out there. So we can get this going. I can't wait for that first official trailer to drop and then for the show itself to drop. Super excited for this project. But before we let you go, I have to ask you for one last thing. Could get a drop, a drop from you. Just something, you know, Phil Lamar, you can say what you're from, and then you're listening to Geek Vibes Live.
All righty. Hey, this is Phil Lamar.
John Stewart on Justice League.
And Hermes Conrad from Futurama.
And Samurai Jack.
And you're listening to Geek Vibes Nation.
That was perfect. That made my childhood over a billion times. Before I let you go, though, my buddy Joel, who was running the boards, so he couldn't be on with us during the interview, just wanted to say goodbye to you before we signed off with you.
Okay.
Hi, Phil. I'm sorry I was busy on the other side.
Oh, I understand. Nice to meet you, Joel.
Nice to meet you. It was an honor listening. It was a great interview.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Had so much fun. So much fun. So we will be in contact with you. We will send you the links to our social media.
Yes. And definitely let me know when this is going up so I can tweet about it.
Absolutely. Actually, by like 9 o'clock,
tonight?
I'll resend you the link and you can start putting it out. That's how quickly we will have this up. So, again, thank you so much for making our childhoods by coming on with us for this great interview.
Oh, cool. Thank you, John. Thanks for having me on, man.
Not a problem. Have a great night.
You too. Take care.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am sweating uncontrollably. This has been possibly the greatest extended weekend I could say we've had, Joel.
Yeah.
This has been awesome. This has been awesome. Seeing Kevin Conroy, getting that picture, speaking with Phil Lamar, having a great interview. This was awesome.
That was a great drop, too.
This
Holy
is awesome.
Shit.
Yes, it was. Yes. Usually when you ask them to do those drops, they don't do the voices. He gave us like three or four different voices. Listen, that might be our permanent – that might be our permanently looped drop that we use for like every show. That was awesome. But, yes, this is what you've come to – this is what you should expect from Geek Vibes Live, guys, and Geek Vibes Nation. We, you know, we all band together to make great things like this happen. Again, none of this would be possible without Joel, Kanan, Dane, Nick, Shannon, the whole Geek Vibes Nation crew, and all of you with our listeners and our fan base. So thank you guys very much.
Say something.
Oh, go ahead, Joel. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I wanted to apologize to the fans that sent questions out. We had some technical difficulties, so I couldn't get the fan questions out when I wanted to. So that's why they never came out, and that's why no one really got a shout-out today. But I promise during the next interview we'll have the questions ready and hopefully not have any issues so that we can get those questions out. But, yeah, I apologize to all the fans that did send questions. A lot of them got answered. You just didn't get any shout-outs today. But I promise next time that we'll fix that.
Yes, we do deeply apologize for that. We will make it up to you guys. We promise. Ooh, excuse me. But this was a great interview. Again, thank you to the entire Geek Vibes Nation team, Joel, Kanan, Dane, Nick, Shannon. And thank you, Phil Lamar, amazing interviewer. Cannot wait for this Goblins project. We have so much in store for you guys this week for Geek Vibes Live. That is our flagship show on Sundays. It will be our season finale, our last show of the season. So we will be doing a award show and a recap of all the great things that happened this year in the geek movie world. So stay tuned for that, guys. A lot of stuff to talk about. And stay tuned for Wednesday for Full Court Press. Thank you very much, guys, and we will talk to you when we talk to you.
Peace.